Were you surprised at all at the impact that the opera has?
It moves me. I get choked up at the end of it, and there are a couple other moments in the story where I get, I am moved. So I think that it was really important when we were putting the opera together that we give a really straightforward account of this war and not get sentimental, and I don't think we do. I think that's a tribute to Mark and Kevin, that they were able to tell this story without it being sentimental, because that's a trap. Everybody knows this story, the story of the World War I truce, where everyone came out of the trenches and had an evening where they celebrated Christmas and then went back and they fought each other. It's a very sentimental told story. But I think because we told it in a straightforward way, that this is a part of being human, that war is, you know, a part of who we are, but there's also an inherent humanity in who we are, that's what people find so moving.
Were you surprised at the impact, or did the opera do what you thought it would?
I can only go by what I felt, so I wasn't surprised. I have to say, I felt that Mark and Kevin wrote a very moving opera. I was surprised at how well it did. I mean, I have to say that. I thought it was a very good opera, but you don't know what you have until you put it in front of a huge audience. And that huge audience was responding in the way that we wanted them to respond. But then I kind of, you know, sometimes you feel like you've done a good job with the show that you've done. But it kind of ends there. This is one of those special shows where you feel like the show has done what you wanted it to do, but then it kind of explodes. It kind of goes outside the opera house, and people start talking about it. And that's what happened when we did it in Minnesota. We had sold a goodly amount of tickets, and then we opened it, and then it sold out. And that was really rewarding.
Yeah, particularly with an unknown commodity.
Yeah, I mean, these things, there's a reason why opera companies don't invest in new work often, and that's the reason. I mean, it helps if you do a La Boheme or, you know, any of the Verdi repertoire, but this is completely unknown, aside from the story, the mythic story that everyone knows. Not too many people in the opera world would know who Kevin Putz is. This was his first opera, so yeah.
Since we've all grown up on war movies, you know, and movies that do all the things that cinema can do, the challenge of putting a war live on stage, how did that grab you, and how did you hope to, you know, meet that challenge?
I didn't know how I was going to do it. I knew there was going to be a battle scene, and Kevin called or emailed me and Mark and said, because he's mainly writes for symphony and orchestra. He said, how long do you want this battle scene? It was just written in the libretto. We needed to see the carnage of war to understand what these men were going through. And he said, I can make it 8 minutes long. I can make it 12 minutes long. I said, Kevin, you know, a minute on stage can last an eternity. So we settled on 5 minutes. And I thought, well, it'll be great, because this is Kevin's forte. And he came back with a battle sequence that was all orchestration, no voice, that was brilliant in that it was immediately violent and loud, and you felt the destruction and the pain and the killing and the war. But then it went very quiet in the middle of it. And I thought, well, what is he doing here? I mean, I don't know. I don't think Kevin knew what he was doing. And then it got loud again at the end, and then there was another quiet moment. So I thought I'd embrace that and try to tell a story with the fight. And what happened was that Mark and Kevin hadn't anticipated was that I snuck the stories of the characters, the principal characters, into the battle so that we could see how they responded to war. Once I knew that I was telling a story with the battle, the rest of it became easy. But I also had a really great fight choreographer in Doug Schultz Carlson, who we wanted to show the brutality of war. And our palette, or our model, was the first 10 minutes of Saving Private Ryan. That's the kind of brutality that we wanted to show, the carnage that we wanted to show. War is hell. We wanted people to feel what the warriors were feeling.
Yeah, but you can't really dismember people on stage the way you can in movies.
No, but you can stab them for a really, really long time with a bayonet. And you can strangle them with a shovel. There are all sorts of brutal things that can be done and that we did do on stage to get that across. But we had workshops before the premiere. And that's where, if there was cutting to be done and reshaping in the opera, that's where it was done. We had a week-long workshop of each act, and then for each act we had an invited audience of, say, I don't know, 50 or 60 people. Everyone got a chance to respond to the music, and then he made the musical changes. Aside from some reorchestration, there haven't been any changes from Minneapolis to here.
During the workshops, were there a lot of timing issues that were dealt with?
No. I mean, you know, I think that comes from Mark. He's very economical as a writer. And I think he was giving lots of really great advice to Kevin in economy as he was writing the music.
One of the interesting things about the opera is many times, particularly with a new opera, you can sense the learning curve going on with the composer. And I didn't get that with this. You know, it's kind of there from moment one, you know?
Yeah. I think that, if I say there's one thing that I noticed about Kevin, who is primarily known for his work with symphonies and orchestras, is that he wrote a couple of really big, juicy sections that had no voice in them at all. And I wonder if that when he gets to his next opera, if that will change, if he'll feel more confident about his ability to write for the voice. Because he has it.
By big juicy sections, you're talking about orchestral interludes or things that he wrote instrumentally and then added the voices?
Or? Orchestral interludes, like the battle scene, which is 4 minutes long. In the second act, there's a impromptu funeral that happens where people are burying the bodies of the dead soldiers, and that's about 3.5 minutes long. There are a couple other like little sections, mostly transition music, that just involve instruments and no voice.
The whole process of bringing a new work into being, what are some of the things that you can do, that you have the flexibility to do, or the kind of things that you have to do?
Well, you know, we live in a day and age where our ability to tell a story in whatever form is becoming more efficient, and an audience is becoming more demanding. They can go to they can read a book, they can watch a television show, they can go to see a movie, they can see an opera, they can see a play. I think there's an evolution of sorts. It doesn't matter what field you're in, what discipline you're doing, where it becomes more and more insistent to be able to keep the audience's attention, whether it's sonically or just intellectually, emotionally. So what's great about doing new opera is when you hear the piece for the first time, say in a workshop, you get to respond to it in a very honest, sort of gut-level way. And you know, hopefully you can help the composer and the librettist get to tell the story as effectively as possible. It's really exciting to see something come to life for the first time. And it's exciting for the people who are involved in it, not just the composer and librettist, but also the singers and the staff. And if you have something that you really feel is reaching people, then it's, you know, like Silent Night did, then it's something to be proud of, and it's something to learn from, and I can't think of a better... It's really become my favorite kind of work.
One of the challenges that the composer told me about this morning when I interviewed him on the phone is that, you know, the truce comes relatively early on in the opera.
Yeah.
And where do you go from there?
Yeah, exactly.
And they definitely found places to go from there. But was this a challenge for you as a director as well?
Absolutely. Because, you know, you could tell the story of the truce in 3 sentences. But honestly, I mean, what's the more interesting question? The more interesting question is, well, what happened then? You know, so they came out of their trenches and they had a nice Christmas day or night. Then what happened? Did they continue fighting? Why would they continue fighting after they know what they've known? So that's the question that is more important than the first question. What are they going to do if they have an opportunity to meet each other and end this war for one night? Okay, once they've realized that they the enemy is not my enemy but my friend, are they going to change their minds? How can they go back and kill?
And that's a very interior process as opposed to an exterior action kind of thing.
Well, it manifests itself in exterior ways, because then you find out that everyone has a different opinion about that. Mm-hmm. There's an opportunity right at the beginning of the second act where there's a rogue soldier who comes out and wants to bury his brother, and that provokes another truce, a second truce, where the lieutenants are now wondering how they all feel about one another. And they all decide to continue the truce. And then you have rogue soldiers from either side who don't want the truce and they're against it. And then you have a peacemaking soldier from the German camp who is taunting his lieutenant for continuing to fight, and how can you do this? So those questions are all answered. One thing that we had to sort of wrestle with was at the end of Act One, when we have the truce and everyone's praying because there's an impromptu church service that happens. And then at the very end of the first act, as they're praying, they hear bombs in the distance, which is a reminder that the war is still going on. And then the lights come down. Well, when Mark first came through with the libretto, I think that the act ended with the soldiers getting up and then going back to their trenches. So we talked about, I thought that was too conclusive. It felt like it put a period at the end of the story. And we all decided that it would be better if we gave the audience a reason to come back. And the reason to come back was they were all in the middle of the truce and at the same time reminded that the war was still going on elsewhere.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.